let's start with, I guess, kind of the broad picture of the impact that COVID-19 has had on the Moors. Can you kind of quantify in broad terms what navigating this pandemic has been like for the Moors as a health system?
That's a big question, and I can answer that in a lot of ways. Let me start off with defining what Nemours is for the benefit of the listeners. We're a multiple state, multiple hospital pediatric health system with a significant amount of activity in the tri-state area based in Wilmington, and also a significant amount of activity in Florida based in Orlando, Jacksonville, and Pensacola. So we have the the benefit and the responsibility of taking care of kids from every demographic, every political background, every socioeconomic class, just about every diverse aspect you can imagine. So we believe that what is possible for Nemours is possible for the health system that takes care of kids in the United States. And you asked me specifically about COVID, and, yeah, and it's affected us in many ways. Let me start off with the human impact. Mm-hmm. So the human impact of the virus on kids from a health perspective has been fortunately mostly good news, and kids have been relatively but not completely spared the devastating effects of the virus. That's not true of pediatric institutions. So our staff and our caregivers and our associates have faced the same challenges, the same limitations, the same everything that you see in adult health systems. And so that's important to understand. And an interesting corollary to that is the financial implications, where a lot of folks have made the assumption that since the virus is relatively sparing of children, that children's hospitals are probably okay. And actually, the financial hit that we've taken is significantly more than adult hospitals in many respects. We've done the same reduction in service. We've invested the same amount in protecting our staff and PPE and altering our processes. And what the adult institutions are seeing a large influx of COVID patients. Well, that's tragic and something we wish didn't happen on a human level. It mitigates a lot of the revenue impact on the hospital. Children's hospitals had all the downside and none of the mitigation, essentially. And I've also, at least in the early stages of the federal response to the financial crisis that health institutions have faced, have been somewhat left out. Now, we're taking some steps to hopefully remedy that, and we made some partial gains, but not all the way back. So that I don't want to go to finances right away, but it's a distinction for people to realize.
Well, since you went there, let's just kind of quick cover that, and I'll ask, you know, what is the long term, well, like short term and long term implications of that financial impact on Nemours in terms of what you're able to do, both in terms of caring for patients and also a lot of the other things that you do in terms of engaging the community?
Well, it's not trivial. We are significantly behind our financial projections at this point, to the tune of ballpark $100 million, which is not chump change, right? And it's important. But I'll immediately follow that by saying we've got a plan to get through this, and Nemours is and will be here forever to take care of kids. So this is a short-term, maybe a blip is a too cavalier a word, but a short-term challenge that we will overcome and get through. How does this impact us? Well, let me turn that around, because I could cast a lot of doom and gloom about, oh, maybe we can't do this, maybe we can't do that. In reality, I think it's valuable to focus on the enormous opportunities that COVID has created for the entire U.S. health systems and health systems like Nemours. And I would, you know, I would venture to say, as terrible as COVID is and as much of a tragedy as it is, in the arc of history, perhaps more positives than negatives will come out of this, and I'd be happy to elaborate if you want me to.
Well, I was going to say, I'm assuming that one of those areas that you can see progress and opportunity in is in the area of telehealth and engaging patients and their families in that way. I mean, before the pandemic, yeah, telehealth was kind of getting a foothold in treatment It seems like it's kind of taken a quantum leap in a very short period of time here during this pandemic. Is that a fair way to look at it, that it's kind of creating a sea change here in the way patients are engaged?
Great question, Tom. Yes, and I will. I'll give you a couple lenses on telehealth. The first, and just for the benefit of anyone who's not aware, telehealth is using digital technology to have a visit with a doctor, nurse, or provider. So you may be on your iPhone sitting at home. You may be in a location that's close to home, and your doctor or your caregiver is on the screen. So Nemours has believed for some time that that has a very important role in the future of healthcare and in the future of the delivery of medical care. So we have invested very, very heavily in the technology and the infrastructure and support, and we've done that over the last several years. So we look like geniuses when COVID happened, maybe not so much because we're geniuses, but because we're thinking about the future. And so we went from across our organization 50 to 100 telehealth visits a week to 2 to 3,000 telehealth visits a week in 1 week. So that's a pretty big increase in 1 week. And it was massively successful from the provider's perspective, from the patient's perspective, from the family's perspective. So that is absolutely wonderful. And it's, I think I used the terminology, and something I wrote about this recently is we made 10 years of progress in 10 days. And so huge benefit and huge learning opportunity. But the other lens I'd put on that, which is even more important, is we learned something about our health system and our health system's ability to respond. And when I say our health system, I'm not talking about Nemours. I'm talking about the system of health in the United States. Mm-hmm. And important changes like telehealth that we've been talking about for a decade and saying would take us decades and perhaps a generation to turn the aircraft carrier in that direction. No, we can do it in a week. And we've learned that we can be incredibly nimble and incredibly responsive very, very rapidly. And the sun still comes up every morning and the system still survives and thrives. And I would carry that analogy to Nemours' core agenda, which is changing the way we pay for children's health care in the United States to a system where the risk and the responsibility and the accountability is on us, the people who provide the care, instead of a third party.
I do want to get to that topic in just a moment, but I am curious. Well, two things I'm curious about. One, on telehealth, was that the slow progress more of a people, patients, kind of being resistant to it, or was it just a matter of health systems being slow to incorporate it and maybe, for lack of a better term, an unwillingness to kind of push the envelope on it until they had to?
So two things, Tom. The major barrier was self-imposed and was in our minds. And a big part of that's on health systems. And we needed to advance our thinking that this could happen and it could happen tomorrow, not in 10 years. But the patients aren't totally off the hook either. And I think just like this was a big wake-up call and learning experience for health delivery systems, is a big wake-up call for patients and families. And you know, they're now saying, why did I think this was a bad idea last month and it's the best thing since sliced bread this month? So that's one aspect. There were some very real barriers from a regulatory point of view, and I'd break those into two categories. Reimbursement, mm-hmm. If you're going to deliver the same care from a telehealth perspective and get paid 20% as much, not a lot of incentive to do it.
Correct.
And interstate licensing barriers, where even though all physicians essentially meet the same standards, it's a radically different thing to get licensed in this state and then travel 5 miles and go through a license process in another state. I give the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, in Washington a lot of credit, and Administrator Verma gets a lot of credit for wiping away those barriers in a matter of a couple of days. We've been debating it for years and the better part of a decade. So we also learned that these regulatory barriers are not really quite as complicated to eliminate as we thought.
Were there any other things that you've seen, in these few months that you've had to do differently that may be things that could be incorporated post-pandemic going on in terms of care, providing care?
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to list the things that we've learned and could you do, I mean, we can talk about this for the next 10 hours. A whole lot of things, from things that might sound fairly mundane to the way we make the schedules for nurses, respiratory therapists, and other key care-providing individuals, where we used to be much more regimented about it. As we've allowed more and more flexibility and people to kind of create their own worlds, we found out that's actually better for them and better for us. So that's an interesting example. There's things in the way that we deal with partner hospitals and community providers that have changed radically. Even something as simple as the way we make daily rounds, we're very committed to the concept of family-centered multidisciplinary rounds. That's a lot of words, but it essentially means the whole team gets together at one point and gets in front of the family. So it means doctors, nurse, pharmacy, respiratory therapist, social worker, every aspect of the care team. Well, it's hard to do that in person. And so, you know, they corners got cut and sometimes part of the team was there and not all the team was there. Well, in a virtual environment, it's pretty darn easy to get everybody together at the same time, and the families love it.
I want to circle back to something you kind of started to allude to earlier, and that is this concept of social determinants of health.
Yes.
And you know, one of the things we've seen during this pandemic is that the disproportionate impacts of the virus on people of color. And I'm curious if that connects to this idea of social determinants of health. I mean, I know it's something we've reported on a bit. It's something you've talked about recently in relation to children's health. This idea of education, nutrition, security, all these things playing as big a role as anything in people's overall health. Does this kind of disproportionate impact of COVID-19 put a spotlight and maybe get a greater focus on this concept of social determinants of health and how important they are in terms of overall personal health?
Yeah. So Tom, we have known with hard evidence, not conjecture, that less than 20% of health is due to medical care. So this $3.5 trillion system that we call a healthcare system in the U.S., it's really a sickness care system, actually deals with a relatively tiny fraction of the things that make and keep us healthy. The rest of it, the things you mentioned, education, housing, safety, freedom from poverty, all of those sorts of things, that's really what health is all about. And, you know, that concept has seemed like sort of interesting academic information. Well, COVID shined an enormous bright spotlight on that because while there's a bit of disparity in medical care that is racially and economically based in this country, That's nothing in comparison to the disparities around education, housing, all the other things I mentioned. And so the fact that African Americans are dying at a tenfold higher rate than Caucasians through COVID has very, very little to do with the medical care being delivered. I don't want to suggest it's completely equal because there's a little bit of disparity. But the real disparity is in the systemic racism that's based into our society and that's hardwired and affects every other aspect of life, which is that other 80 or 85%. And, you know, it's tragic that we're seeing it unfold, but it's wonderful that it can't be ignored anymore and it's front and center and in your face and probably the best opportunity we've had as a society in my professional lifetime to do something about it.
And at core, part of this is, and this is something we've seen Delaware dabble in a bit pre-pandemic, is this shift from fee-for-service to value-based care. Can you explain a little bit about what that means in this context and what role Nemours is playing or trying to play in making that kind of shift?
Right. So let me start with the big picture. So the U.S. health system is a $3.5 trillion enterprise. It's roughly a third of our gross domestic product. And virtually every dollar of that $3.5 trillion goes to pay for the opposite of what we're trying to get. What we're trying to get is health. We don't pay for health in this country. We pay for volume and complexity of medical service delivered, and we get it. So we have the highest volume and the highest complexity of medical care of any industrialized country on the planet, and our health outcomes are among the worst in almost every single category that you look at, whether that's infant mortality or treatment of chronic diseases or you know, pick a measure. We're at the bottom of almost all of them. We believe at Nemours, and I believe very strongly personally, that at the root of that problem is the financial incentives. And the minute we start paying our health system, our United States health system, for health, we're going to start to get it. And behaviors will radically change. And we will be falling over each other trying to invest in education, housing, and the things that actually impact health, because we'll have to do it to survive financially, where now any investment of a dollar in those things comes off the bottom line and comes away from medical care.
How does Nemours help push the ball in the right direction with that?
So Nemours is very invested in leading the charge of changing the definition of health in kids to health and not medical care. And you know, I'll say it plainly. We want to be at 100% full financial risk for the health of every child we care for as rapidly as possible. So that plays out differently with every payer, in every market, at every institution. So our strategy is what I just said. Our tactics or our behavior is adapted to each individual situation.
And I mentioned, you know, there have seen some initiatives here in Delaware, you know, connected to this focus on social determinants of health. And I'm curious if that is in any way part of the reason why you guys recently hired the state's Department of Health and Social Services Director, Dr. Kara Odom Walker, to join your Office of Policy and Prevention in D.C. Was that a factor in bringing her on board? And what are some of the things that she'll be working on as she moves into that office?
So I hired Kara Walker because of the person she is and the skill set she has, which is truly remarkable. Her connections with Delaware and her relationship with Delaware is a very, very important bonus, because Nemours is intensely invested in the future of kids in Delaware. And we see the state of Delaware as our partner in working with us to create what we're mutually interested in, which is Delaware's kids being the healthiest kids in the country and the healthiest kids anywhere on the planet. And because of the unique role Nemours has and plays in Delaware, we actually see that as achievable. And so having somebody of Dr. Walker's vision, expertise, collective experience in health systems, government, and academic institutions is a huge plus. The fact that Dr. Walker also knows how Delaware works and can help us understand and articulate what we're trying to get done in a positive way to the state and with the state is just a icing on the cake. It makes it even better.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, a lot of times people talk about, you know, Delaware, because of its size, being able to maybe try some things and be an incubator for things that maybe a larger state couldn't. Do you at Nemours kind of see the same opportunity here to maybe move the ball forward here because it's a little maybe easier to get things rolling than maybe somewhere else?
Yes, but for me it goes deeper than that.
Okay.
I think the Delaware Nemours thing with kids is unique, and unique means one, and I think it's the one of a kind in the world. So Delaware and Nemours are the only state where there's one health system, Nemours, that essentially takes care of all the kids in the state. Now, that's not all the way at the primary care level, but any kid with a significant problem we're involved in, and we're involved in a lot of the primary care. So that's a one-off. The fact that Delaware, as you articulated, is small and has such a cooperative spirit is fantastic. So you know, we can get the key players in Delaware together at the coffee shop tomorrow morning, where it might take 10 years in a bigger state to pull that off. So that's a very special thing. And also, when we talk about the social determinants of health, Delaware government is structured in a way where the leaders and the funds around those determinants you know, really live in two cabinet departments that are very cooperative with each other, where in other states you might be talking five or six departments that aren't so cooperative with each other. So the stage is really set optimally to show the country how to do it right and to do the demonstration project that this actually can happen and we actually can create a profoundly healthy generation of kids.
I do want to kind of finish up on the big picture where we started. Mm-hmm. How does the Morris kind of move forward with its kind of overall mission over the next year or so until a vaccine for COVID is found or more better treatments are developed? Are there some key areas that you feel like as an operation you need to emphasize during that period of time in this new normal?
Yeah, to flip that question around, I'd say, you know, our biggest opportunity or challenge, if you want to frame it that way, is to not allow COVID to cause us to take our eye off the ball. We know what needs to happen in healthcare in this country for kids, and we know what role we need to play. That hasn't really changed at all with COVID. You know, COVID has changed the playing field a bit, and it's changed some of the ground rules, but it hasn't changed what the right thing to do is, and it hasn't changed what the opportunity is. So, you know, what we need to do is be nimble and flexible and agile to adapt to this world that's going to be different in a month than it is now and different again in another month, but continue to pursue our objectives, which are bigger and broader than COVID will ever be.
But does it make it a lot harder, though, to do the kind of outreach? I mean, I guess what I think about is beyond the care, there's so much Nemours has done with things with in the areas of obesity, childhood obesity, even with things like dealing with concussions and youth sports. Yeah. Does that become much more difficult, at least short term, because of the restrictions that are involved?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say in aggregate, COVID has made our job easier because we have big aspirational innovative ideas and those are no longer background noise. Everything is on the table right now. So I didn't wish COVID would happen. I wish it didn't happen. It's tragic, but it's created a ton of opportunity for us, and we're going to be first at the table taking advantage of that.
Dr. Morris, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you.